This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. We'd love to hear from you. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. And we begin with former U.S. Congressman Charles Bustani, Republican from Lafayette, six-term member of the United States House. He now is in Washington as a lobbyist and spokesman for a group called Tariffs Hurt the Heartland, and his appearance is especially significant on this day. If you picked up your newspaper, wherever you are, if it happens to be the New York Times, the newspaper of record in our country, the lead story, China deploys currency as lever in trade feud, jolting global markets. The trade war between the United States and China entered a more dangerous phase as Beijing allowed its currency to weaken. Chinese enterprises stopped making new purchases of American farm goods. And President Trump's Treasury Department formally labeled China a currency manipulator. The escalation shook world markets as investors looked for safe places to park their money. Wall Street suffered its worst day of the year, with the S&P 500 closing down 3%. Selling, especially heavy in the trade-sensitive technology, consumer, discretionary, and industrial sectors, yields on U.S. Treasuries, which fall as prices rise, dropped as investors sought safety in government-backed bonds. Benchmark indexes in Asia and Europe also fell. Now, this is a perilous situation involving tariffs, and some believe the president is on the right track long-term, but short-term, obviously, it's causing much damage to the U.S. economy, and in particular to Louisiana. And Congressman Bustani, as we get started, Louisiana in this tariff war, if you will, is probably facing more of the brunt than other states in a big way. And I know you're talking about this to groups outside the state, but you're talking to mostly listeners in Louisiana today. What's your sentiment about where we are right now?
Well, first, Jim, thanks for having me on the program. And secondly, with regard to Tariffs Hurt the Heartland, I had a limited contract with them to help them launch the campaign. And that contract is over with, but I still believe in what they're doing, and I think they're on the right track. But to answer your question, Louisiana is a very dependent state upon international trade. It relates to our ports and the things that we export, agricultural products, chemicals, plastics, and so forth. We have major ports in the district and across the state. Secondly, oil prices are affected by this as well, and all of this is creating downward pressure on oil prices, which is going to cause a lot of pain in Louisiana. So we, for a number of reasons, are very dependent upon international markets and what happens. The tariffs are the wrong approach. There's no question that China has been abusing its position. It's been parasitical in the global economy. Flouting rules where it suits their purpose. They've done a number of things, and yet what's needed to change that, to even test whether they will reform, is a lot more leverage than what could be applied than what is being done with tariffs right now. In fact, the tariffs are being borne mostly by American farmers, ranchers, producers, retailers, and ultimately the American consumer. And it's causing a lot of collateral damage. And it's clearly not had much impact on China's behavior. And in fact, as Trump has doubled down in the aftermath of the failed temporary agreement that they were trying to reach, the Chinese have now doubled down on their efforts. And they're not going to change unless we can bring sufficient leverage to bear against them along with Europeans, other Asian economies, and so forth. So I think the Trump administration's embarked on a failed policy, creating a lot of collateral damage to the United States economy and threatening to push us into a recession.
Well, in December, you spoke to a group in Lafayette, and you said at that time, and we're talking 8 months ago now, that the tariffs had cost Louisiana businesses and residents $85 million, and I would imagine that number has gone up significantly. how significant will it be if this is not thwarted in some way, if this path continues?
Well, the remaining tariffs, the 10% on $300 billion of Chinese goods, now means that there are tariffs on basically everything coming from the Chinese market. And so when parents go to buy clothing, school books, supplies and things for school, they're going to see higher prices at the Target or the Walmart. This is going to affect our farmers because of the retaliation. It's going to affect our LNG exports. It's going to affect basically everything. And if this persists into the Christmas holidays, it's going to affect, things across the board that people will be going out to shop for, whether it's, gifts and items or even Christmas decorations. So bottom line is, if you want to deal with China, you have to be much more targeted and precise in how you deal with them. And that means you got to maximize aggregate leverage with allies to demonstrate that China's behavior is the outlier. Right now, going head-to-head with them, U.S. versus China, is not going to be enough leverage to convince them to reform. And secondly, even if they don't reform under all this pressure, we need other markets. And there are now over 400 trade agreements worldwide, of which the United States is a party to only 14 of those agreements. And the two biggest economies are South Korea and Canada. So our farmers, our manufacturers are being left out, or they're actually seeing, or more accurately, they're seeing less favorable terms to engage in the economy, and they're getting slowly iced out of markets. This is not good policy economically for the United States. It's really devastating for Louisiana, and I think a total reassessment of policy is needed right now.
877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, and we're pleased to have Charles Bustani. Miss him in Congress. He was one of the most articulate members of the U.S. House of Representatives, and he ran for the U.S. Senate in 2016. He got 16% of the votes in a crowded field and really didn't miss a runoff by that much against Foster Campbell, edged out on the Republican side by John Kennedy. And Senator Kennedy has become a big proponent of just about everything the president does, and maybe that's good politics. But if you had been elected, would you be speaking the same way you are right now, Charles Bustani?
Absolutely. This is a matter of principle, and it's a matter of what's really best for the United States long term. I think the president's playing a very dangerous game and putting the U.S. economy and ultimately U.S. security at risk. Because ultimately the impact of all of this is going to just increasingly isolate the United States at a time when the United States should be providing leadership around the world. And without U.S. leadership, you start to see all kinds of other bad practices by other leaders, including this escalating conflict between Korea and Japan, two of our most important security partners in the Asia Pacific. The timing could not be worse, and all of this is coming about because the U.S. is not showing the kind of leadership that has kind of kept, provided the glue to keep our allies together and largely keep peace. And the simplest way and cheapest way to do this is through economic engagement rather than having to pay the high price of putting troops all over the place. So I think the president's playing a dangerous game, and I'd like to see Congress speak out a whole lot more on this.
John in New Road says China is the number one market for Louisiana pecans. Tracy at the Capitol asks why farmers, by and large, remain supportive of the president, even though his policies obviously are hurting agriculture and the community that relies upon it.
Right. Well, I think I've had conversations with a number of farmers around the country, and including Louisiana, and many of them believe that we have to get tough on China, and I agree with that. Nobody would be more outspoken about being tough on China. The question is how to do it effectively. And I think most of these farmers are still placing confidence that the Trump policy is the right way to get tough on China, and that ultimately he's going to negotiate a better deal. But I'm here to tell you, having studied China for the better part of 15 years and traveled there, met with their leaders, sized them up, and studied how they have reacted to this kind of pressure, they're not going to back down. It's going to take a lot more. And what has to be done is to put the Chinese in the position of seeing that they are the outlier, and it's in their interest to reform these egregious things that they're doing. So, unfortunately, many farmers still believe that Trump is on the right track. But the fact is, I think they're going to find out the hard way through bankruptcy and hardship that he's not.
Charles Bustani is our guest. 6 terms in the United States House of Representatives. He's now in Washington. As you can hear, he's not bullish on tariffs at all, despite the fact that he remains a conservative Republican. We'll talk with him about where we're headed and how, what impact this will have on the national and local economy. The market is up a bit today, but it was carnage on Wall Street yesterday with the Dow dropping almost 800 points. 877-217-5757. We go to the phones in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane is our producer today, and your number again, 877-217-5757. Charles Bustani, former congressman from the great state of Louisiana, also a prominent doctor for many years in Acadiana. He is with us, and he is no fan of tariffs, even though he is a Republican, probably is in accord with the president on some other issues, but not on this one. And you heard him say that even if he had won the U.S. Senate race in 2016, he would be a member of the Senate, no doubt, and if he had made the runoff with Foster Campbell, he would be speaking the same way he is at this moment. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, David.
Good morning, gentlemen. We have a much larger economy and more spendable income than China has, so it's understandable that we're going to spend more in China than China's going to spend here. The United States produces more than we can consume. If we don't find export markets, the whole economy is going to implode. And since Trump has imposed his tariffs, the trade deficit is going up. And according to the Washington Post, if his September round of tariffs go up, the average American family will have $1,000 at least added to their expenses. So there goes the tax cut.
All right. As far as the long-term implications on the U.S. economy, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
No, you were about to respond. You heard him, so I don't need to.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with what the caller just said. If we're going to grow the economy, we need to expand into outside markets. And placing tariffs only invites retaliatory tariffs. And keep in mind, it's not just tariffs on China that have caused this problem. The Trump administration's placed tariffs on a number of our allies in Europe and Asia, and they have retaliated, closing down markets to some degree. And then secondly, by not engaging in trade agreements that set the stage for American goods to be exported, we're getting hurt even further. For instance, when when the U.S. pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was going to lower 18,000 tariffs and open markets for U.S. goods throughout Asia, the president did this without any alternative. Japan then worked with the other countries, put the TPP together, and then pivoted and did a trade agreement with the European Union. And if you talk to farmers who export their crops today, they're at a serious disadvantage now because the Europeans and others have better market access. And now the Europeans are completing a deal with the big agricultural producing countries in South America. It's going to further harm us. We need to engage, and we need to engage on smart terms, and that's not what this president's doing. And Congress really needs to stand up on this. They have neglected this. Much of trade policy is shared jurisdictionally with the executive branch based on the Constitution, Article 1. And I'm sick and tired of watching Congress sit there supinely accepting all this when the American people are getting hit really hard by this policy. And it's a very dangerous policy in the long run.
Congressman, why do you think that other Republicans are not speaking out as you are right now, those in political life?
Well, I believe, first of all, the president always has a big bully pulpit, and he's convinced a core part of the Republican constituency that, you know, he's right, and many Republicans fear primaries. But I can tell you, it's interesting watching. Just over the past week, we've seen several announced retirements of very talented Republicans. We had a round of retirements announced about a month or so ago, and this is early in the election cycle. And I think a number of Republicans who are reasonable, who understand this kind of policy, recognize the writing on the wall with this, and they just don't want to go through this. And it's getting harder and harder for many of them to assume the policy positions that this president's taking on some of these issues.
The Dow in the early going up 0.4%, 25,815, but that's down from the high of a few weeks ago of 27,398. So you can see that the markets have not responded well to this trade war with China. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Congressman Bustani. And JC, I think you're going to have to pull up Dan. And I think there we go. Dan, we lost Dan. Let's try Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on with Congressman Bustani.
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, sir. Congressman, I understand that we owe China a lot of money. They bought U.S. Treasury bonds. This was to finance the oil wars in Iraq because the Bush administration wanted to keep that war budget off of the books. So basically, we were paid for the war in Iraq with a credit card. Doesn't China own like billions and billions of U.S. Treasury bonds? I think we should be nice to them.
Well, you're right. China is a big holder of U.S. national debt, our Treasury bonds. Japan is, too. Those are the two countries that own much of our foreign-held debt. Most of it's actually held by our Federal Reserve Bank. And it's roughly, and I haven't looked at the numbers recently, it's roughly around 45% of it held by foreign entities, and the remainder, the majority of it held by the Federal Reserve. But fact of the matter is, yes, we're closely integrated economically with China through supply chains and, you know, with private sector business investment and so forth and supply chains, but also because they are a big holder of our debt. This creates a vulnerability, which means we have to play smart, and then we have to use smart economic diplomacy in dealing with China. I do believe that China potentially poses a major threat to the United States because we don't know what their ultimate intentions are, and I do believe that they are on track to try to replace us as a superpower and to set the standards for economics and trade and investment around the world. And I think this is really important given what's happening with the digital economy, because I don't think any of us want a surveillance state. So this is a fight over standards, and who's going to provide the leadership globally to set standards? We have to keep our eye on that ball and recognize that's the game we ought to be playing, not just going after China in a very blunt way without thinking through what the long-term strategy is, because the Trump administration has not thought through a long-term strategy. They're thinking they can force companies to come back and do everything in the United States. That's not realistic. It will never happen, certainly in my lifetime. And I don't see that ever happening. But secondly, I think we need allies in this effort, because we want the allies to see that the American way of setting standards is the right way of doing things. But the Trump administration is not going about that. They're trying to seek short-term acquiescence by China. In the meantime, they're causing much more collateral damage to the U.S. economy and to the global economy. And a lot of people are going to get hurt, including a lot of Americans. I think there's smarter ways, more targeted ways to get tough with China.
JC, let's try to get Dan downtown on. Dan, good morning. You're on with Charles Bustani.
Yes, Mr. Bustani, you talk about what's devastating for Louisiana. Is it devastating for Louisiana and its citizens to have congressmen pandering to corporate interest while in office in order to get those seven-figure lobbying jobs once they leave office, like Tozan did, making $2.5 million a year for Big Pharma.
All right. What about the so-called revolving door? Is that a problem on Capitol Hill?
Well, it can be, depending on what happens. Most of what I do is consulting work. I don't. I mean, I do occasional lobbying. Probably less than 20% of what I do, and a lot of it has to deal with this trade and some healthcare issues broadly. One of the primary things I'm doing is advocating for mental health advocacy. Working with the American Psychiatric Association, which I think is another critical problem in this country. But I think there are those who, you know, just like in every endeavor, there are people who do good things and people who do bad things.
We're going to spend a bit more time with Charles Bustani, fine gentleman, congressman from Lafayette for 12 years and on Capitol Hill surveying the landscape and not liking some of what he is seeing. We're back after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. J.C. Kane is producing, and again, your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Congressman Charles Bustani, the former U.S. House member, six-term member of the Congress from 2005 to 2017, and Henry at the Country Club of Louisiana. Henry, good morning. You're on with Congressman Bustani.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Congressman Bustani. Lord, I was just blown away. I didn't know NPR was running political spots now, but I know you're not working with NPR now, Mr. Jim.
Well, so. you're going to confuse our listeners, but one newscast runs for the network where I am, and another runs for National Public Radio. So there's no political spot on WRKF to my knowledge. But by the way, but underwriting guidelines allow them. So under certain circumstances. But please continue, Henry.
Okay, Mr. Bustani, in your job now as a lobbyist, consultant, and whatnot, it surprised me that you were taking a stand or two against the president. I would love to have heard you say something against him if you were still in office. But nevertheless, what helps you most in that, your experience as a doctor, a congressman, or that lordship that you had?
You talking about Mardi Gras? Well, you know, I'm proud of our Mardi Gras traditions down in Lafayette, you know, just like in New Orleans and other areas around the state. But I have to say that my experience as a physician and as somebody who worked on public policy is, you know, it's all part of who I am, and I still believe in trying to get to the best public policy possible. And what I do in terms of consulting or the limited lobbying I do is focused on what fits in with my basic principles on these things. But also I'm working with a couple of think tanks to devise good policy, especially on trade and our foreign policy, where I develop some expertise in Congress. And I think it's important right now, probably more so than in recent years, given all the difficulties and problems we're seeing, and I think the bad path we're on right now. I don't think I've ever seen it as bad as it is right now. And so, as I said earlier to Jim, whether I were in Congress or not, I'd still be saying the same thing about what's going on with current policy.
Gustavo on Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on with the congressman.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, there was an ad for Eddie Risponi that just aired.
It was not on WRKF. It was on the Louisiana Radio Network, and you were on hold, so you were hearing what was going on the network, not what was going on WRKF. But please continue, Gustavo.
I hope you don't interrupt me any further.
Well, I had to clear your misstatement, as I often have to do, but please continue, my friend.
Okay, have a good day. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Gustavo.
Okay.
Congressman, a few listeners have asked me to ask you about what happened in El Paso and in Dayton over the last few days. And it's been a tragedy. Certainly, America is mourning what is taking place in our community. Is there anything that can be done involving gun regulation that is not being done?
Right. Well, I think things need to be done in a number of areas, but one, I think some of the rhetoric around coming from the president and others are fueling a lot of these divisions. Our politics has been very divisive, and it's causing some problems. I think there's a lot going on social media that fuels this as well. But I think at the very heart of it, there is a mental health crisis in this country, and it is something I am working with the American Psychiatric Association on to try to figure out how do we develop good policies in that space. And I also believe that attitudes are changing with respect to the access to certain types of guns, clips, ammunition, and so forth. And I saw that Mitch McConnell over on the Senate side has tasked three of his committee chairmen to look at things that can be done. The politics of this is ugly, as everybody knows, whether you're on the left or the right. And the fact of the matter is we got a big problem in the country and something needs to be done. I'm not so sure you need extended clips and things of that nature. I don't think those are probably the best way to go. And I certainly believe something needs to be done on the background check side of things, but that won't solve the whole problem. So it's a complicated public policy issue. I think cool heads from all viewpoints need to kind of settle down and figure out how do we really set in place a number of policies to address the gun issue, the mental health side of this, and what's going on in social media, all of the above.
Well, and for those unfamiliar, Charles Bustani is related to former Governor Edwin Edwards by marriage, and the former governor's brother, Nolan, died of gun violence 36 years ago this month, and I'm sure you'll never forget that day.
I will never forget that. Nolan was my father-in-law. It was very traumatic for my wife and I. We were married 2 years and had an infant son. And it was very traumatic, something we never forget. And certainly every August, we think about it and remember it. So gun violence has affected a lot of families. It's affected the psyche of the country now because it's at that level. Something needs to be done.
Speaking of, tomorrow the former governor, Edwin Washington Edwards, turns 92. he's had a long life and let's say a full life.
It's been a colorful one, that's for sure.
You still talk with him every now and then, don't you?
Oh yeah. I see him at family events, and he's still sharp as a tack and active as can be.
Well, Congressman, it's always good to talk with you. We miss you on Capitol Hill, and look forward to another conversation soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Anytime.
See you soon. President Trump yesterday denounced white supremacy in the wake of twin mass shootings over the weekend. He cited the threat of racist hate, summoned the nation to address what he called a link between the recent carnage and violent video games, mental illness, and internet bigotry, but he stopped short of endorsing broad gun regulation measures that activists, Democrats, and some Republicans have sought for years, such as tougher background checks for gun buyers and the banning of some weapons and accessories such as high-capacity magazines. Gun sales at these gun shows are unregulated when they're between private citizens and who are not gun dealers, licensed gun dealers. And Congressman Garrett Graves was at the press club of Baton Rouge yesterday, and he said that he will not change his mind. He voted against tougher background checks a few months ago in February. Here's how he responded yesterday to the press club of Baton Rouge.
He's asking if the president's statements today supporting universal background checks causes me to reflect upon my vote on H.R. 8, which was legislation that passed through the House earlier this year, and I did oppose it. No, it doesn't. And let me be very clear. If we come out and we pass legislation like H.R. 8, and then pat ourselves on the back and say we've done it. None other than the conservative Washington Post, and yes, that was a joke, did an analysis years ago where they looked at every gun control bill that had been introduced, every single one of them that had been introduced by Democrats, and came out after the Pulse nightclub shooting and said, you know what? This was in response to a comment that Senator Rubio made. Said, you know what? Actually, if these bills had passed, it wouldn't have stopped. It wouldn't have prevented these disasters or massacres from happening.
That was Garrett Graves. Garrett Graves, like other members of Congress, survives by virtue of getting campaign contributions. And last year we noted that Senator William Morgan Cassidy of Louisiana, who's up for re-election next year, has received well over $1 million in campaign contributions from the gun lobby. And all of Louisiana's delegation votes exactly the way the National Rifle Association wants the members to do, except for Cedric Richmond, who has gotten no contributions from the gun lobby, as in zero, and Cedric Richmond represents New Orleans and North Baton Rouge, go figure. But here's Garrett Graves on the gun proliferation in America. In one breath, he's expressed exasperation over the amount of guns we had, but nonetheless, the congressman believes that we should do nothing as far as laws to prevent people from getting more and more guns. But here's how he responded to questions about guns in America.
If we're going to sit here and say, oh, it's universal background checks, and that's going to solve it. Do you know how many guns there are in the country today? Anybody know that number? How many guns there are in the country today? We have nearly 400 million guns. 400 million. Do you really think that some background check or some gun ban is going to suddenly make murders or mass shootings go away? No, it's not going to. And we're going to make, I'm going to say it again, a grave error. If we're going to come in and pass these things that emotionally make us feel good and don't do a damn thing about the violence that's out there.
That's Garrett Graves, who has won three terms now for the U.S. House of Representatives, and next year will be up for re-election again, and quite possibly in 4 years will be a candidate for governor of his state, articulate guy, a handsome public official who probably is going places that go beyond what he's done in his first 47 years of life. Garrett Graves is a fascinating fellow, as you can tell, very articulate man, but went to the University of Alabama and did not receive a degree from that great institution. His siblings all went to LSU, and they have degrees from Louisiana State University, I believe, every one of them. But Garrett chose to go to Alabama, and he represents Baton Rouge in Congress. I wonder if Tuscaloosa would elect somebody who went to LSU and did not finish as their congressman in the great city of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. I wonder. 877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email, and we will return with more after this brief timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. In a few moments, we'll hear from an investigative reporter, Nick Bryant, who has been a pioneer on following child trafficking, and he has some interesting nuggets of information about a gentleman who, and I say gentleman in quotes, whose life has dominated the news of late, Jeffrey Epstein. But before we get to Nick Bryant, Subash at the Country Club of Louisiana has been holding patiently, and I want to get you in before we switch topics. Subash, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate I wanted to say something on the guns. I agree with the Senate Congressman that background checks do very little to stop this violence. The only thing that will stop is to let people have only the hunting rifles and no other guns, because there is no reason, unless your life is in danger, to own a gun. And only 22% of our Americans own all the guns. 78% don't own any guns.
All right, that's a good point. And there are those who believe that assault weapons are used only to hunt other humans. They were meant for warfare and should be off the streets. 877-217-5757. Nick Bryant is with us. As I mentioned, a pioneer child trafficking authority. He's followed people who are involved in these networks since 2002. And he, of course, has followed Jeffrey Epstein, a man who had access to the rich and powerful, including two U.S. presidents, Clinton and Trump, And his black book is, according to our guest Nick Bryant, only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to exposing high levels of, quote, sexual perversion. What in the world is going on, Nick Bryant?
Well, with Jeffrey Epstein, we're seeing a phenomena that I had written a book about, and it was published in 2009. It was called The Franklin Scandal. It was basically the same thing that we're seeing with Epstein. It was an interstate pedophile network that was flying kids around and pandering them to the rich and powerful. And with Epstein, I was the one who first discovered his black book and put it up on the internet. And it's a who's who of power brokers around the world. Now, not all of them are guilty of molesting children, but a number of them are.
Well, you're talking about his unredacted black book, right?
Indeed, indeed.
Well, who are some of the names that, and you framed it well, these people are not guilty, but they had connections to Epstein. In some cases, he had more than 20 contacts for people like Trump and Clinton. Who are some of the others who were in his circle?
Well, it gets to be kind of mind-boggling. I mean, there's Prince Andrew, there's Peter Soros, there's Bill Richardson, the former governor of New Mexico. There's Richard Mitchell, or George Mitchell, the former senator from Maine. Even Courtney Love makes an appearance. But what's interesting is the names that are circled, Epstein's house manager stole that black book from Epstein, and he tried to sell it to one of the lawyers who was representing some of Epstein's victims. And ultimately, the lawyer told the FBI about it, and the FBI made it into a sting. And the house manager said that the names that were circled, the FBI called the names that were circled, quote-unquote, material witnesses to Epstein's crimes. And a number of the rich and powerful are circled.
So the circles may mean something?
Yes. According to the FBI, they could potentially be material witnesses to Jeffrey Epstein's crimes.
Well, let's start with the two U.S. presidents, Clinton and Trump. Are they culpable in this? One current U.S. president. Please go.
Well, Trump's name is circled in Epstein's black book, and Epstein had over 20 contact numbers for Clinton. So at this point, there isn't a smoking gun, although there was a woman that filed a lawsuit against Donald Trump and said that she had been molested by Epstein and Trump when she was 13 years old, but then she withdrew her lawsuit. So the media never really got traction on that story.
What did you make of this party at Mar-a-Lago with Trump and Epstein, two men with several, and when I say several, probably over 20, maybe more than that, but let's say over 20 young women, apparently cheerleaders, and they were all there with Trump and Epstein as the only men who were present. What was that all about?
Given Trump's and Epstein's predilections, I think it's fairly easy to extrapolate that meeting wasn't really about higher ideals of philosophy and spirituality.
Well, Epstein, as we know, had access to planes and went to places outside the United States and sometimes took famous people with him. Did Bill Clinton ever make one of those trips?
Bill Clinton was on 25 trips with Jeffrey Epstein.
25. Now, he has said he was not on 25.
Yes, he has said that. But you say otherwise. I was the one that put Epstein's passenger manifest on the internet, too. So I wasn't getting any traction in New York. I was trying to sell this story in New York, and I live in New York City, and I was trying to sell this story, and I just couldn't get any traction. So finally, I just put it out there on the internet with Gawker, and I just felt it was very important to get that information out there because Epstein is a predator. He's like a great white shark. And the only way that he's going to stop preying upon young girls as if he's behind bars.
Bryant is the author, our guest Nick Bryant, of The Franklin Scandal, the only book to tell the story of interstate child trafficking and its network that he says a major one involved Jeffrey Epstein, a billionaire. Some are questioning that, but a very rich man in New York City who had access to the rich, the powerful. And how did he get away with this for so long?
Well, there's various scenarios. According to Alexander Acosta, who was Trump's Secretary of Labor, Acosta was the U.S. Secretary or U.S. Attorney for Southern Florida, and he was responsible for actually adjudicating with Epstein. And, I mean, he just gave Epstein a slap on the wrist, basically, and when he was coming into the Trump administration, he said that he was told to back away from Epstein because Epstein was intelligence. That's on the internet, and that's pretty solid. It comes from Vicki Ward.
Now, Alan Dershowitz was one of those who was mentioned, who has said that he did nothing wrong. He's one of many. Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel, is on this list that has been released to the public, the unredacted black book. Nick Bryant is the one who did it, released it. These people, if they are innocent, is it fair for them to have to defend something that probably they're unable to totally get out of the public domain if they are innocent?
Yes, both are circled in the black book, Dershowitz and Ehud Barak. But I wrote an article on the passenger manifests for Gawker because it was the only publication that was willing to had the fortitude to publish the passenger manifest in the black book that I had. And if you read that interview, you can Google Nick Bryant Gawker. You'll see that Alan Dershowitz was less than forthcoming in that interview. And he's gone on a major offensive to really destroy the credibility of these two women who say that they were molested by him. And it's very... victims of sexual assault are very reluctant to come forward. And there was a judge who, before he was a judge, his name is Patrick Shills. He was the... a very highly regarded defense attorney before he became a U.S. District Court judge, and he adjudicated about 500 lawsuits for the Catholic Church, molestation lawsuits. And he said he felt that probably 10 of those 500 were being dishonest about being molested. So it's very rare for victims of sexual assault to lie about it.
Where do you think this is going?
I think it, in the book that I wrote about the other power broker pedophile network, there were two pimps. It was a much bigger network than Epstein's network. One guy committed suicide, and I do believe that he committed suicide. And the other guy kept his mouth shut and did 10 years, and he's been taken care of ever since. But Epstein is going to be in prison for the rest of his life. So I don't really know how that's going to turn out. It's going to be interesting.
Well, it appears that he tried to hurt himself. Was that an act, or was he probably so despondent that he might have decided that life wasn't so good anymore?
Well, it's tough to know. It's really tough to know. I mean, Jeffrey Epstein is obviously a sociopath and a liar. So it is difficult to know whether that was an actual suicide attempt or not. But it must be difficult for him. He has an island. He has a beautiful mansion.
We do have to roll, but Nick Bryant is the author of The Franklin Scandal. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.